reforma energética. Y aquí aprovechamos para volver a recordarle a los dueños de Epson, de Shell, de Chevron, de que no van a hacer ningún negocio bueno en nuestro país, porque el petróleo no es del gobierno, ni siquiera es del Estado, mucho menos de Peña Nieto. El petróleo es del pueblo y es de la nación.
De nuevo, Juan de Dios Hernández Monje, catedrático de la Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, la UNAM.
El artículo 136 de nuestra Constitución, que establece que la Constitución mexicana no perderá su vigencia aun cuando por una rebelión se interrumpa su observancia. En este caso yo veo una rebelión del aparato legislativo en México que daría motivo para que una vez que se restablezca la libertad del pueblo de México y que se regrese a la vigencia de esta Constitución antes de la contrarreforma de la que estamos hablando, puedan ser juzgados todos los que hayan participado en el proceso en contra de la nación mexicana.
Por su parte, Andrés Manuel López Obrador aclaró que Morena primero va a agotar el procedimiento interno y si no procede con justicia, llevarán el caso a instancias internacionales. El Código Penal Federal de México contempla una pena de 4 a 40 años y hasta 50,000 pesos de multa a quien cometa el delito de traición a la patria. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Soy lo que dejaron, soy toda la sobra de lo que se robaron. Un pueblo escondido en la cima, mi piel es de cuero, por eso aguanta cualquier clima. Soy una fábrica de humo.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Un discurso político sin saliva, las caras más bonitas que he conocido, soy la fotografía de un desaparecido.
El gobierno sirio rechazó las acusaciones de Washington de que no tiene voluntad para destruir las armas químicas. Asimismo, negó que torture niños, como afirmó Naciones Unidas. Y San Juanús reporta.
Damasco ha refutado las acusaciones de Washington, confirmando su decisión a cumplir el plan de desarme químico en el plazo fijado. Aclara que el retraso en el traslado de las sustancias tóxicas fuera del país se debe al incesante apoyo estadounidense a los grupos armados.
Naciones que patrocinan a los grupos terroristas deben darse cuenta del grave error que cometen y deben entender que con ello están cometiendo crímenes contra la humanidad. Cuestión que debe ser condenada enérgicamente, sobre todo por el peligro que representa su actitud al traslado de las armas químicas fuera del país.
El gobierno sirio ha desmentido también el informe de Naciones Unidas que lo acusa de detener, torturar y asesinar a menores de edad. Asegura que el organismo internacional, siguiendo el discurso occidental, actúa con doble rasero respecto a la crisis siria.
Le hemos enviado a Naciones Unidas decenas de misivas y documentos sobre las violaciones que cometen los terroristas a los derechos de los niños. Sin embargo, el organismo internacional lamentablemente acusa al gobierno de estas violaciones, cuestión que rechazamos, confirmando nuestro deber en proteger a los niños de Siria que consideramos el futuro de nuestro país.
Las familias sirias a su vez culpan a los terroristas y sus patrocinadores del sufrimiento de sus niños. Además de reclutarlos como combatientes, los utilizan como escudo humano y como víctimas de supuestos ataques químicos del gobierno.
La realidad sobre el terreno difiere totalmente del informe de Naciones Unidas y de las acusaciones occidentales, pues el gobierno garantiza educación y atención médica a los niños, mientras que los terroristas con sus atentados les privan la felicidad que merecen, destruyen sus escuelas y agobian a sus familias, situación que exigimos a la ONU presione para que se detenga.
Mientras, Damasco se prepara para la segunda ronda de negociaciones de Ginebra. A pesar de la creciente ola de presiones, afirma asistir a la cita decidida a preservar las constantes nacionales y desenmascarar la campaña mediática en su contra. Hisham Wanous, Telesur, Damasco, Siria.
Los candidatos a la presidencia y vicepresidencia de El Salvador del Frente Farabundo Martí para la Liberación Nacional, el FMLN, se reunieron con organizaciones sociales de cara a la segunda vuelta electoral.
La fórmula presidencial del FMLN, Salvador y Óscar, se reunió con diferentes sectores del movimiento ciudadano El Salvador Adelante, a quienes agradecieron el acompañamiento con su voto en las elecciones del pasado domingo.
En la próxima elección del 9 de marzo levantaremos todos juntos la mano victoriosos. Y Óscar y yo vamos a iniciar un gobierno que le va a dar continuidad a todo lo que hemos iniciado.
El Frente Farabundo Martí ganó en 13 de los 14 departamentos del país, con un margen de votos que excedió los 266.000 sufragios. La tercera fuerza, Unidad, formada por una coalición de tres partidos políticos, entre ellos Gana, dicen estar analizando la adhesión al FMLN.
Nosotros estamos promoviendo una derecha de centro, una derecha incluyente, una derecha que pueda dialogar con la izquierda. Nos parecen que los programas que ha planteado la fórmula presidencial del FMLN son programas que van enfocados a las clases sociales más necesitadas de este país.
La victoria electoral del FMLN con el 10% de votantes a su favor los convierte en la primera fuerza política del país, que los compromete a seguir con las transformaciones sociales.
Nos aprestamos también a crear un ambiente de gobernabilidad incluyente en el cual tomamos en cuenta todas las fuerzas políticas del país que quieren hacer del país un país realmente democrático donde la justicia impere, especialmente para los más pobres y para los excluidos tradicionalmente.
El Tribunal Supremo Electoral no ha hecho el llamado oficial a la segunda vuelta electoral, ya que continúan con el escrutinio definitivo. Pero los partidos contendientes ya comenzaron a afinar sus campañas particulares. Ernesto Ábalos, Telesur, El Salvador.
Con música y bailes, el pueblo chileno recordó a la cantautora Violeta Parra, fallecida el 5 de febrero de 1967. Los compañeros de Telesur informan.
Basta con leer sus décimas, que son maravillosas, son extraordinarias. Cuando uno la lee, aprecia lo injusto lo que hemos sido con ella, y no solo en esa arte, ¿no?, que es de la poesía, porque es una poeta maravillosa, extraordinaria.
La Viole es inspiradora para nosotras. Ella vivió intensamente y nos ha dejado su legado revolucionario, su legado de energía para la revolución, para atrevernos a decir las cosas, luchar por nuestros derechos.
Violeta Parra rescató del olvido y la desaparición las canciones del campesinado chileno. A pie anduvo las distancias recogiendo a pulso los cantos populares de los pobres. Los grabó en 5 discos al ritmo del guitarrón, a quien también salvó del olvido. Eran los años 50, así renueva la poesía de la canción popular chilena y retrata a su país en diversas manifestaciones artísticas. Es que además de cantar, Violeta pintaba en óleo, bordaba tapices y trabajaba el arte en papel mache. Fue la primera latinoamericana en exponer en el Museo del Louvre en París. Las arpilleras eran para ella como canciones que se bordan. Obligada a guardar reposo a causa de una hepatitis, dice: tanto tiempo no podía quedarme sin hacer nada. Un día vi lana y un pedazo de tela y me puse a hacer cualquier cosa. Así era Violeta. Cualquier cosa que hiciera se convertía en arte, porque en ellas dejaba toda su verdad y la mirada cruda sobre las injusticias que sufrían los suyos. Violeta cantaba historias, pintaba recuerdos, bordaba protestas. Su vida quedó hecha poesía en las 83 décimas autobiográficas de Violeta Parra. Alcanzó a grabar con su voz solo algunas.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Tune in at 7 p.m. for the Great Leap Forward. This is really good. interview. You really, this guy, he is.
Cut! Take two!
Tune in on The Great Leap Forward. We have a radio station. On Free Radio Santa Cruz. What's the matter with me? I'm losing something. What is it? Oh, yeah, my mind. On The Great Leap Forward at 7 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM. It's so complicated, this whole thing. I don't know if I can take it much longer. There's nothing better on Free Radio than The Great Leap Forward. You're going to want to gather around the radio at 7 p.m. Wednesday. Every Wednesday. If you miss one, you could perish. Yes, your life could become nothing at all. Bob's making me do this. If anyone can hear this, please come help me. He's keeping me captive. Where are the refreshments anyway? I thought there'd be chocolate-covered strawberries.
After you're done, you get your treat. Get to work. I can't work like this!
Live from downtown Vancouver, broadcasting around the province of British Columbia, this is The Phil Good Show.
The author of The Ancestor's Tale, The Selfish Gene, The Blind Watchmaker, Climbing Mount Improbable, Unweaving the Rainbow and the Devil's Chaplain, and The God Delusion, Richard Dawkins, is in studio today. Good morning. Welcome to British Columbia.
Good morning.
You wrote, when one person suffers from a delusion, it's called insanity. When many suffer from a delusion, it's called religion. provocative statement. How is it so many people believe so strongly in something that is so hard to prove?
I think there must be lots of reasons, but probably the most powerful one is childhood indoctrination. It's very, very hard to shake off something that you're told with great conviction and certainty by your parents, that all your friends at school believe, your teachers believe. Why would you not believe it under those circumstances? It takes some kind of intelligence or ability to break out, to leave all that behind, and not all that many people do it.
Did you start as a believer?
Yes, I mean, I went to Anglican schools, yeah, like most people in Britain. My parents are not particularly, my parents are not religious at all. But I went to Anglican schools, and so I went to chapel, and I learned about Bible stories, and I learned about God, and was simply told as a fact that God exists, that when we die we go to heaven, all that kind of thing.
It's funny, we lost a prominent Canadian author last year, Pierre Burton. He did not believe. And the day after he died, I mentioned that to a mutual friend, broadcaster Vicky Gabbro, who quickly said, well, now he knows. Do we have to die to know for sure?
Well, my belief is that when we die, we won't know either. So yeah. I think we shall never know. It's highly, highly unlikely when you think about it, because our brain is where all our thinking goes on. Our brains are evolved organs for thinking. And there's absolutely no reason to think that we can think without a brain.
So when did you come to this? Did it come like in a flash, or did it over a period of time? Did you go from being skeptical to being certain that...
No, I went gradually more and more skeptical. I think the first thing that many children notice, actually, is when they learn that there's more than one religion and they can't all be right. And so I think it was my mother, probably, who pointed out to me when I was about 8 or 9 that there are lots of different religions. And immediately I thought, well, what's so special about the one I'm being brought up in? So that was when I first started getting skeptical.
They all have similarities, though, don't they?
Yes, they have similarities, but then you sort of notice that everything you believe is exactly what you've been told. And why were you told this rather than being told whatever it is they're told in Afghanistan or Delhi?
And what sort of response do you get?
To the book?
Well, to the book and to this the whole concept. I mean, there are so many people. I mean, I hear from people, and I'm sure we're going to this morning. And I've always been baffled by the fact that there are people, not everybody who believes in religion or is religious, but the number of people who believe fervently in what was written more than 2,000 years ago by a large people who were very much, if anything, about things like being, for example, or science.
Yes. I mean, if there was just something in the Bible that impressed you, like if it actually mentioned, say, evolution, or if it mentioned atoms or electrons or something, then you'd be really impressed. But all it mentions is what a desert tribe knew about and you'd expect them to know about, not actually all that long ago. I mean, most of the books of the Bible were not written more than about 800 BC ago. So even the Old Testament is not actually very old.
So you've clearly done a lot of studying.
Well,
about religion.
Not really. I mean, my subject is biology, and I've done a lot of studying of that, and about evolution. But no, I mean, I haven't done a lot of studying of biblical history.
Are most scientists atheists, would you say?
Statistically, yes, most of them are. About 60% of American scientists are, for example. I don't know what the figures are for Canada. If you'd go from just any old scientist, where about 60% are atheists, if you then go to members of the National Academy of Sciences or of the Royal Society, and that will include Canadian scientists, as well as British, New Zealand, Australian, etc., in both cases, it's about 90%. That's 90%.
So the more you know about science, the less likely you are to believe in religion.
Yes.
Has religion done some good?
I'm sure that there are many people who have done good, who have been religious, and some of them will even have been influenced by their religion to do good. So yes, but religion has also motivated people to do evil. So I don't think we can make that kind of an argument. It's not a case of totting up the number of people who've been religious and done good things, bad things, etc. It's a matter of looking at whether religion is calculated to make you do good, and I don't really think it is.
Mm. Richard Dawkins is my guest. Just one of his books, but probably the most controversial, The God Delusion. To Pat, good morning.
Hi, Bill. A frequent caller to your show. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
It's Pat O'Brien. I'm the spokesperson and president of the Humanist Association of Canada. And whenever I'm asked if I'm an atheist, I say to my Christian friends, well, that makes you an A-Muslim, makes my Jewish friends an A-Christian. Nobody likes to be referred to by what they say.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with a couple of perhaps guest hosts or guests or just listeners in the studio who may speak as well as listen. One of them, of course, is the infamous Michael O'Grady, Madcap Michael, as I've never called him before. And the other one, Punctilious Pat, who's also hanging out. We'll see if the two of them want to join in or just remain strong and silent. So you're tuned to 101.3 FM, in case you don't know, and we're also streaming at freakradio.org. Stay with us for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the February 6th, 2014 show.
The hallway, a problem for only one reason. That president raises the question, who wants a plan? The homeless, our problem for only reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 99 dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? the land. The homeless, our problem, for only one reason, your presence raises the question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is hope? Ecocide, genocide, where is hope? Ecocide, genocide, where is hope? Ecocide, genocide, where is hope?
And welcome to the Thursday evening edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. There's a shitty council meeting coming up on Tuesday, but they don't let us know yet what the agenda is, although it's supposed to be posted 72 hours in advance. So I suppose if it happens Tuesday at 2:30, Monday at 2:30, Sunday at 2:30, Saturday at 2:30, Saturday, Sunday, Sunday to Monday, Monday to Tuesday. So if it's Saturday at 2:30, that's 72-hour notice, I guess. Usually it is up by Thursday evening, and I noted it wasn't, at least by Thursday afternoon, contacted the city council and found out that they said they were going to have it up by Friday morning. So we'll see. Is this important to anybody? Probably not. I'm not aware of any pressing issues that are coming up, and I will be talking about those if I see any, or if I bother to look, on Sunday. And that's when I do another show, which is from 9:30 to 1. However, I also want to let you know that battle ready, or is it battle weary, Bob Patton is going to be on the air. He's former co-founder of the Human Rights Organization in Santa Cruz, which was sort of a Huff-like group, somewhat milder than Huff, but diligent nonetheless, run by him and Bernard Klitzner and John Teelking, Bashful Bernard and Dangerous John, as I used to call them. When they were living in Santa Cruz, they've since moved on, although they occasionally stay in touch. We get updates from Dangerous John from time to time, actually with some regularity. And he's also been the chair of the Vets Council, and president, I think, of the Veterans Council. I probably don't have the name right, but he's going to give us the update on the latest shenanigans at the Vets Hall, which apparently are happening, and we'll learn about that at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. We have a caller, so I'm going to see who it is. Hey, you're on free radio with three of us here. Hello. Can you hear me? Can I hear you? Wait a minute. Let me get some earphones here. Don't go away. Don't give up hope. Say something. Hang on. Let's see where we're at. Can you hear me? Hi. Who's this? No. Oh, Burrito Blues Man. I'm having trouble. For some reason, our speakers are not speakering. Let me see if I can do something about that. I don't know why we are having trouble. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to... people can hear me talking, but for them to hear you talking, I'm going to have to pause and kind of put the telephone up to the microphone, which is a very unideal way of doing this. But I wish I could, but it's not the phone problem. I think it's a problem with our studio equipment. Plus, we don't have long-distance access. I'm glad you're calling in yourself, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to hear you. But let me just ask you, and I will try to listen as you talk. Like, our guests will probably not be able to hear you. You can try listening to guests on these earphones, but I don't think you're going to hear much. For some reason, we have a problem here. Well, I will hear it, and the people who are outside will hear it. So that's a beginning, I guess. And let's hope that means. Yeah. Well, you will be speaking to the people of Santa Cruz. You just won't be speaking to the two people in the studio. Because I think we're having. Let me double check. We'll try this. Maybe this other earphone will actually help. Hang on. Let's see here. So say something. Are you saying something? I bet you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're having problems hearing you, but I think that the people outside can hear you. Can you hear me now? Okay, so why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, as I said, I'm the original, formerly the, still is the original. work as a statue, and from there went all over Europe, made movies in Holland, Germany, documentaries, all the way to India, and I basically saw the European continent as a living peace statue. But now I'm playing blues, and most of the people in Santa Cruz probably know me singing on the mall, singing my song, I Can't Get No Dough to Get a Burrito, which I wrote. And it's very famous. The people liked it so much. And then I saw a film of Tom Scribner, and me and him used to sit and talk. The old Saw Man before.
Yeah, the musical Saw Guy.
Mm-hmm. Are into music as I'm into now. And I told you that I would like to call you and talk to you about how difficult it is to have such a beautiful audience and people love you, but the harassment that you have to go to when you play on the street is overwhelming, and it destroys and takes from your music. And as you know, I'm working in drug education and AIDS education and non-gun violence. And I just want to say to the people of Santa Cruz, I really appreciate you and how good you have been to me all the times I've come down there and played music. A lot of people think I live in Santa Cruz, but I don't. I've always lived in San Francisco, but I would always drive down and play blues in Santa Cruz.
And you know, I think people I think know you. People know you, I think, as the as I call you the burrito man. Is that a fair way to put you? And you're a tall, well built African American guy. Is that fair to say?
It sounds like I got a microphone.
Yeah, I've got a. And again, we're kind of making it up as we go in terms of how this is. But you are going on the air, so that's good. So what happened to you recently in Santa Cruz that concerns you?
Telephone booths, and the artists are almost put out in the streets and almost in danger of being hit by cars. And then there's a guy who can stand up on the box and play the accordion and stand in doorways when stores are closed. But if I play in front of a store that's closed, then they are harassing me. And I guess someone says he had a special permit. I don't know if you told me that or not, because I asked you about this guy. How was he able to do things that we're not doing?
Well,
and one thing I want to make clear to people,
you'll hear him
play music in the street. It's not that you're humble, that you love Dylan Stoddard, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, all the great musicians. And they played and they started, some of them did in the streets. And, you know, our street artist is a profession. It's not a beggar sitting on a corner with a guitar. Another thing I would like to say is that I don't think music is about age and getting on American Idol. If you have a voice, like the lady in England, and she proved that age doesn't make a difference. And I would love to come to Santa Cruz a little bit more, but it takes from my music when, from the time I get there, there's a policeman standing and watching me and telling me I can't play here and I can't play there, and, you know, and walking back and forth.
Do you want to share that with
me? I love Santa Cruz.
Sure,
and I know
I'll share
people
it with
love me.
It's okay,
I'll make this a little bit short. I did my first live radio show on the university station, and I have a CD that I made a copy of, and I made some tapes. It was such a beautiful show. And
now, are you online as well? Are you, excuse me, let me interrupt you here. Are you online? I mean, are you can people can hear your music online at all?
I don't have a website. My sister in San Antonio is working to set up. I don't even have a computer. I don't like it. I'm kind of old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time you were in Santa Cruz?
Oh, it's been a month and a half ago.
And what happened the last time you were in Santa Cruz?
Well, you know, like when I sit up down there by the cookie shop where I used to play by the tree,
That's the Pacific Cookie Company, yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Well, you noticed that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Santa Cruz. You know, it's my best. If I was a multi-platinum artist and I sold a billion records, I'd rather play on the mall in Santa Cruz. That's my enjoyment. And it's not about money. My music has never been about money. And I'm totally into drug education. As you know now, Elrond is up tremendously. We just lost an actor from Elrond. The other drug is just as bad. So
heroin, yeah.
It just bothers me that we have to spend so much money.
Well, let me ask you. First of all, what name are you? What name are you known by? Do you? I mean, we can call you the Burrito Man, but what exactly is? What name do you want to be known by?
Elisha, first name, last name Whittington.
Elijah Whittington.
Santa Cruz, right there in front of the Cooper House.
Yeah, that was a while ago, though, now.
Jazz band and the black, the African man who was a paraplegic, his name was Jim Lewis. And he used to sing this song, Bye Bye Blackbird. And Franco used to play the drums, and there was an artist there, John something. He's a Caucasian guy, and he was in the movie Brooke Shield. You probably know him.
Mm. Have you... How are you performing regularly in San Francisco?
No, as I've been playing in the heat of Ashbury where there's so much drug addiction, and I spent $70 to get a big sign made at Office Max, and I've been playing there like 7-8 years. I've been playing in the heat. Never had one complaint. Got a brand new electric guitar from a fan and a brand new acoustic. And all of a sudden, a new owner bought the store where I play. And they start calling the police, and I feel like I was in Louisiana.
What store
and
was
where
that?
Somewhere where I grew up.
Elijah, what store was that?
It's the Decade of Passions.
One more time?
Salted. I haven't played that much. I'm rehearsing over at the Observatory of Flowers in the park, which is so beautiful. All my week practice there every day. I do. I keep my music up where I play or not. Because I play for the love of music and not for money. And I'm really serious in the drug education because my people, so many has lost their lives and go to prison. And they just lost in a drug culture. And, you know, to re-educate and re-culture would be a good idea.
So police in San Francisco, on the complaint of this merchant, are... Are they telling you can't play? Are they forcing you to move around? What is their, what are they doing?
And I said, what is this? I feel like I'm back in Louisiana where I grew up. And two ladies got up and said, this man was practicing his music and he wasn't bothering anybody. Why are you asking him? And so it was like definition of character. And so there was a guy that's passing out street sheets where I played all these years. And he said, you know, the lady is housing you just like she did me. Next thing I know, there were 7 or 8 San Francisco police officers around me and harassing me because I was having a conversation with my friend.
What exactly did they tell you in terms of your... Did they say you can't play? Did they just show up and intimidate you by their presence? What was their deal?
There's one guy up in the building, he's been calling me all kind of belligerent names. And how could this happen? And I played on that corner for 6 or 7 years now, or 8 years in the heat. And as I said, I never had a complaint before. That was the first complaint, so it was like an insult to me. And so I decided I could move to another spot, but it was just like me working so hard in drug education and all those beautiful little kids that go to the school and come by and they smile and we've known each other for all these years. All the people in the neighborhood, how they come by and they just give me so much gratification and encouragement. And it's just one bad apple can spoil the whole thing. And the merchants don't know we bring tourists to the area. If you could mislead, you don't run tourists away. That's different than being a drug addict and a homeless and standing on the corner with a good charge on it. I'll lose some money to get you heroin, because you can get heroin, from what they said on the news, $7 to $8 you can get it fixed.
Yeah, I'll rush right up. Let me ask you, how often do you play in San Francisco? And again, what do the police office...
It was Friday and Saturday. I never worked on Sunday because I always went to the drum circle that we created. Me and a friend of mine who I met in Hawaii when I was touring as a living statue. So I was living in Europe, and I came back after I got a divorce, and I started to play drums, and we created a drum circle.
Mm-hmm.
And Santana came in and did a video. And then I picked up guitar after I couldn't statue after getting over colon cancer and almost died from colon cancer. But the blessed thing was is that I went to Europe, and by getting the European medicine, it saved my life. Otherwise, I'd have been dead here.
Well, again, let me ask you, Elijah, when these cops come up to you, this is about the third time I've asked you, so if you can focus on this, what do they say exactly? Get out of here?
These things are not true. For instance, they came up the time before last. I said, what's the problem? The guy up in the building is calling to the cops, some guy who's been cussing me out, says, I'm going to get rid of you. And they say, we got a complaint. I said, what's the complaint? This guy. And I say, well, I guess I'll just pack up and go home. No, you can't leave right now. We got to wait till this guy come down. He said, you threatened him. And I hadn't even seen the guy. So it was, I said, wait a minute. I feel like I'm in Louisiana where I grew up in apartheid. Are you guys trying to frame me? That's what I said. At first, I was getting harassed. I'm handicapped, disabled. So I wasn't allowed to sit. I had been sitting all these years, and then the cops started asking me, they're going to take you to jail if you don't stand up. So I went over to the station and talked to the chief. He said, leave a man alone. He's handicapped. He accepts. But as you know, they don't do anything. And then they come, even when the guy called the cops and said I was cussing kids, they were saying, oh, watch what you say around kids. That's like telling me I was guilty. She didn't get his name or his address and find out why was he definition my character. Why was he doing it to me? And plus the fact that the cops, I asked the girl for her name, and so I could have a witness, and they said, no, you don't have to do that. They was discouraging the witness from giving, so I could have some record of, they was harassing me.
So have you...
Six or seven cops have come for one African man. I don't know what kind of threat I pose.
Threatening music, yeah. You're a musical threat.
Of a police officer who had beat up a church son down there, and they threw me in solitary confinement.
When was that? How long ago was that, Elijah?
Oh, this was some years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then they gave me a float. I had to leave Santa Cruz because I was a living statue that everybody imitates. A lot of people don't know that. Me, my wife, and my little young baby had to leave Santa Cruz.
You remember what...
walk on the Pacific Garden Mall.
Now, yeah.
Who can talk into the
mall? That's what Santa Cruz. I've never been arrested before. My friend is in Hawaii right now. He can prove it. We would go listen to the trial because they were harassing us. We were young roster men full of energy and spreading love like Bob Marley.
So, Elijah, are there any charges pending for you? Yeah, well, let me ask you, Elijah, let's move from history, Elijah, let's move from history to the, you know, to the present. Are either San Francisco or Santa Cruz authorities charging you with anything?
No.
But they're keeping you away because they're an intimidating factor.
I mean, when I go set up, the guy gonna pick up the phone. Here come 10 cops, and I'm sitting there being.
This is in San Francisco. Right, and what about, and you're getting
it. I spent $70. It tells you the effects of heroin, crack, speed, LSD.
So, and in Santa Cruz, Elijah, in Santa Cruz, you're facing the same problem.
From the National Drug Education.
Elijah, whoa. Let me interrupt you here. You're facing a similar situation in Santa Cruz. You probably don't get seven cops, but you do get some kind of police contact. It's 15 feet. It's 14 feet, actually. Is it 14 or 15? No. Well, Elijah, let me interrupt you here because Elijah, we're up against the clock here. So what I'm going to suggest you do, if you want, is try calling back on Sunday when hopefully our equipment's going to be better. Yeah, I mean, what you said has gotten out on the air, you know, I think.
Yeah, could he contact one of the people who advocate for musicians to be in the area with a camera the next time he comes?
So there's a suggestion, Elijah, for you from one of the studio people here, is that if you contact, I don't know, some colleague or an organization concerned with protection of musicians or the Coalition on Homelessness and ask them to, have a cell phone to video the next time you go down there so that, you know, this contact with the police gets actually recorded really clearly.
Case number, not interrupting you, I could go to court and get the records and file a definition of character.
Uh-huh.
I remixed this song by Sam Cooke.
Well, listen, we're going to leave it there, but why don't you call back again if you'd like, talk more. I again suggest a video record. It's not just the court record you need. It's you need to get a video account of what's going on. What's that? Well, I'm saying it's helpful to have a video record of the police doing their shit, because then not only is it I can't tell you, man. No. What I'm saying is when the cops come up to you on the street, either in Santa Cruz or San Francisco, and hassle you, it's helpful for the future to have a video record of it, because then, you know, you can post it on YouTube, you can bring it to court, you can take it to a lawyer if they ever find one for a civil lawsuit and so forth.
It's objective.
Well, I understand. I appreciate that. I just hope my fans, I feel a little bit disappointed they support me, because I know the people, the overwhelming that I get from my fans. Otherwise, I wouldn't be there, and I know the people love me and they treat me good. But it's just that it's tough, the streets, man.
I hear you. We're going to have to leave it. We're going to have to leave it there, Elijah. Listen, thank you. We've been talking with Elijah Whitney. Is that correct? I'm sorry, Elijah Whittington. And your stuff is or isn't currently online. You let us know and call back again if you want, and let me know if you come to Santa Cruz.
You know me, you go way back. You're the bubble man. I remember when you first started.
I believe it. I got to go, though. I'll talk to you later. Got to roll.
Thank you so much. God bless. Bye-bye.
You too. Oh, boy. Well, working with this equipment is a challenge, to say the least. Any comments from our two guests, Pat and Michael?
Well, it just sorrows me to. I'm a lover of music. I play music, and it sorrows me to hear. He's probably a good musician. How he's harassed by the local police here. They basically. I'm not from this town. I've only been here maybe 2 months or so. They have a bad reputation, the police here, for being more ignorant than they should be as policemen. So maybe they need to screen the police a bit better when they become policemen, so they so they can be better behaved and more stable emotionally.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, it's really important to get objective evidence of any kind of harassment, because you can take it away from the realm of he said, she said. So you make sure and you get video, or at least a digital audio that you carry on you, because they can't say that you edited or you changed things that are videotaped or digitally recorded. So it's really important to start holding the police and the city officials accountable by getting objective evidence. And, you know, I say that to everybody that does any kind of performing or anything that's being harassed by the police, is get that objective evidence.
So let's turn now. I agree with you, Pat, if you can. And I try to do that with tape recordings.
But
I want to get to what your situation is, Michael, because we just got a big block of our time that was taken with this particular call and are struggling with the technical problems. You had a problem at the Abbey Cafe, where actually Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, used to meet. We met there for about a year, you know, in the morning. Mm-hmm. This is a cafe that is, I think, it's just right off of Mission at High Street or thereabouts.
Yeah, somewhere up at the top
Highland,
of the hill.
Thank you. Yeah. Highland Street.
I think it's called Highland before it turns into High
Street.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
There's also the Abbey Church there. It's a whole complex, religious complex there called the Abbey Church. I'm not quite sure what the relationship to the Abbey restaurant is. They say that they just rent the space from the church, so I'm not quite sure what the relationship
is. But you've been a regular customer at the Abbey restaurant.
Yeah.
I was, too.
I'm a regular customer, too.
I think every Wednesday I used to go there. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. And then we moved, I think, either we moved to the Firefly or from the Firefly, and finally to the Sub Rosa, where we now have our Wednesday meetings at 11 o'clock. Every Wednesday, come on down. Free coffee. Their group concerned with homeless civil rights. And how frequently have you been going there at the Abbey?
Some weeks every day. And it's
carrying your backpack in with you?
That was one of the issues they brought up when they fired me a few days ago out of the place. They said I had too many bags. Well, you know, I cycle on a bike, and I've got to have a lot of different stuff with me. And the other issue, I was staying too long in the men's bathroom. I'm not sure how they determined that.
What were you doing in the men's bathroom, Mr. O'Grady, or doctor?
Maybe we don't want to know.
Dear. Now, we should point out that you yourself are not just a mister. You've told me you have some kind of, you're a doctor.
I've got about 4 or 5 degrees in science. I'm a medical doctor and a naturopath.
Okay, a medical doctor, I mean, you spent many years in medical school?
Administering to the sick, I spent maybe 40 years in all.
You mean sort of on-hands activity?
I think what's happened here is, you know, I've been traveling. I'm also a painter, so I've been traveling around California for a few months, and my beard has grown. I haven't actually, went to a barber.
And quite a beard it is, I might add.
Is that right? Okay.
Nice looking.
Okay. And so my hair's grown a little bit, but I tie it up behind.
I like the beard more than the hair,
is
but
that
that's
right?
Just my...
Okay. Well, anyway, the thing is, it's obvious that I was mistaken for a homeless hobo. And, you had a campaign, or somebody in town had a campaign going against the restaurants that ill-treat the
We were
poor
concerned.
People.
We had heard that there were people, 3 cafes, Pete's, Starbucks, and Coffee Roasting, and probably Lulu Carpenter, so it wasn't too clear.
Lulu's is pretty clear.
We're banning people with backpacks. And I don't know if they're banning all people with backpacks at Lulu's, but backpacks were completely banned, supposedly, at those other 3 places. And we did survey 9 cafes, gave them a pledge of non-discrimination, asked them to get back to us and let us know what their policy was. None of them returned phone calls that later on, and none of them posted this non-discrimination pledge that I've heard of, but all the managers at the time did give us accounts of what they said their policy was. Most recently, the Cafe Paragalisi became an issue because there's been apparently, I've been told, police pressure on the management to deal with, I don't know, marijuana deals on the street or other drug deals nearby that are they're somehow connecting with the Paragalisi, and there's threats to the management of the Paragalisi. Again, this is secondhand information. This is what I'm told, that if they didn't start throwing people out who might or might not be engaging in, you know, low-level capitalism of a pharmaceutical nature with illegal drugs, that they would attack the management. The police would go after the management. This was apparently Deputy Chief Clark, I understand, himself took this position. And I haven't quizzed Steve Clark on this. He and I are more on sneering terms than on speaking terms, so I don't know if he would give me a candid answer. But There has been a new fence built along the Elm Street side of the Cafe Pergolesi. It's a tall fence. And there are regular houseless people, Razor Ray, Brent Adams, and sympathizers who state that the Pergolesi is one of the more liberal cafes, as they let people in who to spend hours there. Brent, for example, worked on his video for the Occupy Santa Cruz history there for long periods of time. I went in there and visited him there occasionally. Razor Ray apparently spends a lot of time there, I'm told. He's a blogger under the name Anti-Imperial and has a very sharp critique of Santa Cruz and of me as well. He has sometimes expressed the willingness he's going to... Well, I don't want to say he's going to become violent, but he's pretty strong in his criticisms of different folks he disagrees with, and that's his right. And I'm glad that they're, you know, he's able to speak candidly. So, but Cafe Pergolesi came up as an issue because a guy named I think it was Mike Waller Mark Waller? Yeah, he reported being told. Not only couldn't he not be in the Cafe Pergolesi, but he could not be on the sidewalk in front of the Cafe Pergolesi.
You mean public property?
Well, it is.
I didn't know they can tell you that you can't be on your own property.
Well, people can tell you anything they want, but can they tell you and enforce it? Well, in the sense that they can intimidate you, as we just heard Elijah got intimidated by the police. And cafe owners can have a similar effect because people like to be able to feel they can go to a cafe and, you know, be treated like a human being and not be evicted. And so they tend to be, I think, sometimes overly solicitous and submissive to cafe stuff. On the other hand, some of the people I can read some of this stuff about the Pergolesi which I've been given permission to read. Unfortunately, this website, Citizens for Positive Change, apparently has a private policy, so you're not supposed to divulge what they say, which I think is kind of backward, but, you know, if that's what people want to do. However, the individual made the original complaint about Pergolesi and started this lengthy thread, probably one of the longest threads on that site.
I didn't know we had that policy. I'm the admin there.
Oh, well, you're the other admin. Petra said that was the policy.
Oh, it must be that other group, but I can't say its name. Positive Change is my brother and I. So, are you talking about Citizens for...
I think Citizens for a Better
Santa Cruz.
That is not, I don't think that's a private group. I think that's an open group. So
Positive Change, we had to go private because people, certain people on what we call CFAB, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, were screenshotting people's posts on my group, and to protect the privacy of my group members, unfortunately, I had to go private. So that's why we did that.
Well, the original thread... the original concern by Mark Weller said this, and I'm quoting him directly because he's given me permission to do that, and I posted it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, the website I encourage people to check out as well, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. This morning I was standing on the sidewalk in front of the Cafe Pergolesi's, I think it was 3 or 4 or 5 days ago, talking with a friend who was there having coffee. The heavy-set young woman that works there mornings came out to the top of the steps and told us we could not stand on the sidewalk in front talking. She stated that they were cracking down on people hanging out. Now the issue is I've been an occasional customer there for months, homeless, but was always able to arrive in a car. My sleeping bag and luggage cart were in the car, not visible. Today, without a car, I had my cart with me, and it was set on the sidewalk out of the way while I was talking. My clothing is exactly the same as always, clean and not appearing, quote, homeless. So the only difference was the sleeping bag and baggage cart. This is the typical asinine attitude displayed here in Santa Cruz toward the homeless. I can guarantee I will not be a customer there from this point on, and I will spread the word that this establishment is no longer worthy of being in business. And there's more, but I have you in the studio with your concerns about the Abbey Cafe. So before we go on, I probably should have finished with you first, or we should pursue your...
Basically, I told them I had several degrees.
The Abbey Cafe?
When they brought me out to the sidewalk outside the cafe, I told them I had several degrees. I wasn't a homeless person. I wasn't an ignorant person. And
there are concerns where you were too long in the bathroom, and what was the other one?
Well, first of all, I asked them, well, why are you throwing me out? They wouldn't tell me. They wouldn't tell me. And I said, well, you've got to give me some excuse or understanding of why you're kicking me out. Because, you know, then I can correct it. If I know what the problem is, I can correct my behavior. I can correct whatever is the problem. And eventually they told me those two things. They told me... too long in the bathroom, and had too many bags when I arrived by bicycle.
How many bags did you have?
Oh, I had 3 or 4 bags, not that many.
That is like the Abbey.
Small bags.
Just
small
the bags. Background I know about the Abbey, so I'm going to definitely talk to them about it, because I've been going there. But from what my understanding is, it was started by a pastor that always wanted a coffee shop. And so the Abbey... Mm-hmm. He opened it up. It's very friendly. It's very student-friendly. Yeah. I've never heard of anyone being kicked out. The only thing about the bathroom is, which is kind of discriminatory, the women have, like, 2-stall bathroom.
Yeah.
And the men's is a...
single.
Is a single, and it's for men and women. So, you know...
Well, that's because women usually sit down when pissing. And,
but, I mean, they should have 2 stalls for men. I mean, why do the women get their
because
own private
bathroom?
Because
women take bathroom? Longer, and they have to...
But it doesn't matter. It's still discrimination. I'm going to... Because the pastor, I don't think he would appreciate what they're doing.
Well, I'm going to talk to the pastor.
When did this happen, by the way?
Just a couple of days ago. I think it was last Monday.
What time?
It was sometime in the morning, I think, when I arrived there.
Who was the person who excluded you?
There was a young girl, about maybe 35, 40, and then there was a taller elder lady. I don't know if she's the manager or not. But
they didn't give their names?
I didn't ask their names, and they didn't want to give any information.
So did this happen when you walked in? Did it happen after you'd bought coffee?
No, normally I buy a coffee always when I go there at about $2.50, probably the most expensive coffee in town. And,
that's standard.
But maybe on 2 occasions within 2 months, I might have not even gotten a coffee because sometimes in my stomach I get acid reflux sometimes, and so I don't adhere to anything. But I also eat food in there, so you know I spend a reasonable amount of money. So the other thing that happened was
did you purchase anything on this occasion?
No, because I just had been there a few minutes. I just sat down on the side sofa thing, and I was organized my bags, and then I opened my phone. You know, my phone. I was going to make a phone call.
I wanted to ask you now, how full was the cafe?
Quite full.
And were there people waiting to sit down?
That I don't think so. I've never seen anybody waiting to
sit
down.
We always find
there.
A seat.
There's lots of seats. It's a big.
It's been a while
since
I was there. I know
place,
it's got an outdoor area too, although it's been pretty nasty weather. So I don't know. Maybe not on Monday, but
I was there Monday afternoon.
Now, were your bags taking up space on the couch or anything, or they?
Those couches are basically on the side couches. They're basically just one person using one big old couch. You know.
So they were taking up space on the couch.
One or two of them were underneath the couch, and
right.
There were one or two above.
Did this person ask you to, you know, I don't know, could your bags have been moved so that they would have been out of the way with someone else was waiting?
They gave me no
options.
No options. I mean, I would have complied with whatever their request was.
What exactly did they say to you as they approached you, if you remember?
They said they just approached me while I was sitting inside, and they said, "Can you take all your stuff outside?" And I said to them, "Oh, this sounds serious." And they said, "Yes." And then I proceeded to out to the front, out to the sidewalk in front of the cafe. And then they told me I was banned, and they didn't want to give me any reason whatsoever, except I kind of persisted. I said, I need to have some reason so I can at least adjust my behavior or adjust the problem. And eventually they gave me those two reasons that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one they brought up was something that happened around Christmas of last year. I arrived up there, it was to open at 7, which is the normal time during the week, and nobody came. Nobody came there. The girl said afterwards she was short of staff, and so for like an hour and a half or something, or even 2 hours, nobody showed up. The cafe was locked. And while I was there getting colder and colder, waiting for them to open, I wandered into, like a gymnasium, you know, like where they played basketball or dancing or something, like a gymnasium. There's just nothing in there. There was only one chair in there. And I sat in there out of the cold, and eventually the girl did come, and she rang the call, the police, and the police came and checked me out, and that was all.
Were you admitted to the cafe after that?
No, that day she said, the policeman asked her, well, can he go to the cafe today? And she said no. So
is this the same woman who evicted you, or a different woman?
I believe it was one of the women who evicted me. And now, the gymnasium, well, the door was left open. And that belongs to the church, the Abbey Church. It's nothing to do with the cafe, according to what she told me. She told me she rents the space from the church. So if that is true, then that particular gymnasium has nothing to do with the restaurant, so it shouldn't be a problem for her.
So you've been up there, Pat, on a fairly regular basis?
Oh, yeah. When I was going to Cabrillo, my friend and I would go there almost every day.
How about in the last 6 months?
Oh, God. I've been there, I'd say, like 75% of the time. I go and I sit there, I buy something, I go on the computer, I spend 3 or 4 hours.
So have you noticed?
And I carry bags with me.
Have you noticed anyone being excluded up there?
No, I never have. And that's why I'm shocked, because I know, like, this cafe is, like, if you see somebody alone at a table, you can ask them if you can share the table and stuff. It's the friendly, I thought, excuse me, the friendliest cafe. I think we should also give a description of what he looks like, you know, how threatening he looks. How would you describe yourself?
I didn't know it was threatening. I think I'm a...
No,
I'm
let's a, describe you physically.
Well, why don't you describe
it? Yeah, why don't you do it?
Well, I don't want to... Okay, you can tell your age. You're older. I'm a beard.
I'm actually 67, going on 68.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 67, going on 68.
In
got
March.
A little bit of, just a little bit beyond, to almost to the shoulder hair. Clean, well-dressed, in a sweater. He's very
lean. Bushy beard.
Well, bushy beard.
Not as bushy as yours.
Not as scraggly as mine.
Yours needs to be trimmed. His is more trimmed.
His is
or it
more,
grows
yeah,
more evenly.
Very, tight beard.
Very slender man. He looks.
Are you
like,
coming on to this guy?
See, you made me describe him.
I made her do it. It's true.
Is that chocolate cake or that picture making you think I'm coming on to him?
I'm not sure what's going on here.
He doesn't look like homeless to me at all.
No,
in fact, he probably dresses better than I do.
So you're camouflaged. You're secretly
homeless. Oh, here's what I didn't tell you. I was interpreted as being homeless. When I was outside talking to them, they gave me a list, a long list, I don't think I have it with me, of all the places where I could get food and get a shower.
Oh, they were trying to help you.
No, that they were trying
insulting.
To ease their consciousness. That's what they were. But the point is, that piece of paper proves right there and then that I was taken to be a homeless person. When, in fact, I don't eat at any homeless shelter.
Smell that man, see if he smells bad.
Well, I don't drink alcohol.
I'm sitting next to him.
I don't
if he smelled, I'd be out the door.
I don't take drugs. I don't drink alcohol.
You don't smoke, you don't chew.
I eat in restaurants all the time.
You look articulate.
I eat in the food stores.
All right, so the point is, the real question arises, the same thing I raised at the Huff meeting yesterday. There I asked, is the Cafe Pergolesi discriminating against homeless people, either somewhat selectively? Are they doing so under police pressure? Are they doing so to homeless people, let's say, that they don't have long experience with? Are they doing so if homeless people are associated with another group that they find troublesome, like maybe young people?
Now, is Abby going to start doing that?
And are other cafes doing the same? And I have not yet been able to get a clear answer that, but I am getting complaints that, that bother me and that make me want to get more information. And Huff members at the meeting yesterday did not seem too enthused about doing this, and I bow to the what Huff wants to do as an organization. But as an individual, I intend to research this further, and I think the way to do it is to very publicly sit in front of these cafes with a clipboard and say, what's going on? Are you being discriminated against? Have you seen it happening here? Is it not happening? Are things good? And, you know, some people want to use sort of the gentle approach. They want to go to the management, you know, kind of massage them and say, what are the real problems? You know, we're having some problems. Can we work this out behind? And I don't mind doing that.
That's
although
the first step.
I thought that we did that when we gave this non-discrimination pledge, at least didn't go to the Abbey, so they haven't gotten the pledge yet. But I think it has had some impact, because when I spoke to one of the people who is a regular customer there, he told me that that his discussion with the manager indicated the manager was aware that the Huff was concerned about this, at least some Huff members were concerned about this issue, and that he wanted to, know what was going on. But as far as the Pergolesi goes, and perhaps as far as the Abbey goes, there's a perception that it's a friendly place, more so, let's say, than Lulu Carpenter's, more so than possibly Starbucks.
Definitely.
I don't know. Coffee Roasting has recently put in couches, and they've opened up their bathroom to the customers, at least. Before, they didn't even let you use the bathroom if you were a customer. You had to go down the street or go into the taqueria place next door and get past their bartender to use the bathroom.
Yeah, I know where you're coming.
You know, so I mean, it's a really, it's interesting. I'm concerned. My fantasy paranoid scenario, and it is not necessarily proven at all, is that there is pressure coming from groups such as the police department, such as conservatives in the downtown association, such as, I don't know, Take Over Santa Cruz, which calls itself Take Back Santa Cruz, or Santa Cruz NIMBY Neighbors, which calls itself Santa Cruz Neighbors, that there is this sort of attempt to drive a whole class of people away or make it less friendly so they can get rid of a class they regard as, I don't know, mentally ill, dope dealing, alcoholic, bums, hippies, I don't know, lock up your daughters, whatever the deal is. So, yes, Pat.
I just wanted to say I've been talking with a citizen of Santa Cruz and another citizen. They're talking about setting up a Facebook group that's going to be private just to talk about this discrimination of houseless people, backpacks, how some people can bring in backpacks, some people can't. So that's going to be set up soon, and it's going to be Santa Cruz backpack discrimination. So look for that. So if you want to be part of that, because this is just pure discrimination, and it needs to stop, and we need to address it as a group and individually, and we need to let these cafes know it's not okay.
Well, there are other points of view. The Pergolesi, for instance, one individual I won't name states that she or he was amazed at how people will come and sit in groups with their dogs and large backpacks and often not pay. And this person has found the Pergolesi to be very accepting, although I got to say that activist Steve Argue did not, and he was very concerned about their,
I found it really dirty. I would never go there.
Oh, the Cafe Pergolesi?
People don't flush the toilet and stuff, and I'm like, it just needs it needs to be hosed out and cleaned and bleached. So I never go there. So why they're worried about homeless people going there?
What Mark Weller continued and said was, when a business tries to control a city's sidewalk, there's a problem. The sidewalk is not their property, although in a way it is, although the public has an easement on their property, as I understand it.
No. I don't think maybe a few feet from the wall.
No. Let me put it this way. I don't know for sure, but my understanding is they own the property, but they can't control it because it's a public sidewalk.
They're forced to do an easement.
In other words, they're forced to do an easement, but they have to, for example, keep it up. That is to say, if there's a problem on the sidewalk with the landscaping, they could be sued, as I understand it. But I'm not sure about that. But in any case, it's a public sidewalk, which is the issue.
And owned by the public.
It's owned by, it certainly we have the right to be there. No one involved, according to Mark Weller, at the Pergolesi was using the facilities or even on their property. Well, that's a good, at least not on the property that they exclusively control. Actually, the person I was talking to was there as a customer and had a coffee paid for. He was on the sidewalk, though, as was I during our brief talk. And I, that person actually weighed in, the person he was talking to, also on this website. Again, I won't name who that person is. And what that person said was, I can find it. It's a little backward here because these comments are sometimes... Another person spoke about the Cafe Pergolesi being a fine place. Staff has always been attentive, kind, and respectful. They put up a lot of bullshit on a daily basis. They're baristas, not social workers. And if you smell... this person heatedly wrote, if you smell like piss, take a shower and come back later. Yeah. If you buy... if you smell like piss, take a shower and come back later. If you buy a drink, you have an hour and a half until you need to at least pay for a refill. If you're caught selling drugs, you're banned. If you're disrespectful to employees, you're 86. If your dog is not a service dog, no dice. If you harass customers, you can be banned. Violence is not tolerated. Vandalism is the reason for expulsion for life. If your backpack is dirty, can't be brought into a place serving food. This is a business, not a place for underage kids to smoke cigarettes. If you're under the age of 18, you're not allowed on the smoking deck. Playing your instruments on the deck will not be tolerated unless you have permission from the manager. Nothing wrong with any of that, but it doesn't address the issue of the backpack ban
or
a person getting harassed on a sidewalk for being in front of the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Or people, you know, being... this originally came up at the Huff meeting before Mark's comments 2 weeks ago. It actually prompted us to do this backpack bigotry survey and request that people post a non-discrimination pledge.
I was really upset by it.
And if you may remember, at the Huff meeting, there were about three or four, probably travelers, we'll call them young travelers, who mentioned that they and others had been, just after they'd bought coffee at the Pergolesi, they were ousted. And then another person, Sir William Blake, who's now tabling downtown. Well, he's not tabling. He doesn't have a table, but he's trying to get cases of discrimination. He has a sign that he's in front of Forever 21.
That's
he
talks his name?
And my brother's
his
looking
name,
for
that's what
that
he calls
too.
Himself. I'm not sure what it, that's. Yeah, that's what he says. He pointed out he'd also faced, being told to leave Pergolesi after buying three cups of coffee. And I don't, again, these are anecdotal accounts. And what we need to do is do a more systematic approach if anybody wants to take the time and trouble to do it. We were thinking, I was going to encourage people to do it after the last Huff meeting, but I had other responsibilities that had to be done quickly, and there was not, people were afraid that, that you don't want to go after the most homeless-friendly cafe in town, as some people perceive it. You want to go after other places like, Lulu Carpenter's was suggested. But again, Lulu Carpenter's did not specifically acknowledge it bans backpacks, so I don't know. That was our original point of focus.
I saw some supposed letter from the owner of Lulu's posted to you on the Topic Santa Cruz forum.
I mean, he and I
don't know if it was real or not, but if it was, definitely I'm never going back to
Lulu's.
Well,
Lulu Carpenter's, we have protested in front of there some years ago because the owner, Manthri Srinath, came out and harassed a disabled guy with a bunny because he was panhandling on the sidewalk, peacefully sitting there with a sign. And we did some tabling out front, and we encouraged people not to buy, bigoted, do business with a bigoted cafe, and we served coffee.
Understand why they banned you for life.
I was banned before that. I was banned 5 years before during the Iraqi war when we had a week-long protest downtown. We actually stayed 24 hours a day to try to stop the Iraqi Bush's war. The Bush-Obama war.
A real terrible cause there.
And so what happened was we went around, at one point one of the activists went and bought coffee, and the owner got very upset with that person and threw coffee on her and her companion.
True.
And I went over to interview him. I hadn't been banned from there, and he immediately banned me when I walked in with my tape recorder and said, "I'd like to interview now." And he tried to get me off the sidewalk because the Lulu Carpenter's sidewalk cafe is divided by the public sidewalk. That happens.
The seats there. The seats.
Yeah, I mean these owners have finagled their way into, or actually been enticed into, taking up large amounts of public space. As you might have heard Elijah talk about from San Francisco.
With no vote from the public.
Yeah, no, there's no vote, and this public sidewalk is being sliced away for commercial purposes, and so Manthri is. Ironically, Manthri also has had a reputation at different times of providing food to homeless people out the back door.
Really?
There's always these contradictions that come up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I do have another idea for people because establishments do check this. But go to your Yelp page and say that if they're going to be discriminatory towards people that they perceive to be houseless, then you're going to boycott their place. Because by putting bad recommendations on it, that can be a powerful tool against these businesses.
I think that's an idea. Go to Yelp as a suggestion. What we wanted, people on this website asked me what I suggested be done because they wanted a positive solution. And I said, I don't know. I mean, obviously, the positive solution, if there's discrimination, is to get these businesses to stop discriminating. But, some people said, you're just raising the level of hostility, and, this is going to cause more conflict. Of course, Martin Luther King was accused of similar things, not that I'm Martin Luther King at all.
He was arrested for that.
His point was you have to raise the creative tension in order to expose the problem so they'll actually be addressed instead of being ignored.
Silence never works.
If those restaurants object so strongly about backpacks, why can't they have a little cage or something in the restaurant?
Or a sign.
Put your backpacks here.
And do it to everybody.
Yeah, everyone puts their backpacks in that box.
I also have a situation where I was taken as a houseless person. And I can share that. I mean, it really infuriated me. And I, pretty much don't go to that business unless I'm desperate for some free Wi-Fi. And it was really humiliating because
it was a business.
It was the donut store on Mission and Fair, who has lots of people going there with the laptop.
Farrell's Donuts?
Yes, Farrell's Donuts. Mm-hmm. And I happened to one day, I had to take care of some stuff, and so I did stay a long time. And then suddenly, I don't know if he's a manager or the owner, but he works the graveyard shift. He came and told me, which is amazing. He said, I'd been there 7 days a week. I'd been staying there five or seven hours a day, which was totally untrue. So I felt like he was discriminating against me, assuming that I was houseless. And I am going to go on Yelp and put a negative thing. Why do you provide free Wi-Fi at a donut store if you don't want people to stay there on their computers? And I've noticed that other people, some that are houseless, clear out before that man comes on his shift. Now I know why.
Right. Well, there is, for the devil's advocate argument here is that, if these problems can be quietly resolved by discussions with the owner, and if they can receive reassurances, they may have had a bad experience with someone else earlier in the day, and you may be, being unfairly, but targeted because of something else that was done, and I don't mind people trying to do this. The trouble is, I'm afraid in Santa Cruz it's becoming institutional. And,
exactly.
And I know that I was a big advocate for the let's all kiss and make up approach when they did this shit at Denny's 25 years ago. I was here in town in 1989 when they turned away a homeless woman for coffee because I think she asked for a... They claimed that she didn't pay or she had panhandled her. Her name was Barbara Haglund. And so we all came in and sat at the counter and ordered coffee and went with her the next time, and they told her to leave, and they said we're with her, then you all have to leave, and I said no, we're not going to leave, and so they called the police, they arrested all of us, and they dropped the charges, but this was Denny's, and Denny's was then fighting racial discrimination lawsuits.
Right, they finally got sued.
They did get sued for that in different cities.
Really?
And so at that time, I sort of was, there was another woman, Calamity Jane Immler, who was arrested with me, and Linda the Lark Edwards, who were very, don't give in to these guys, don't be nice to them. The only thing they understand is a fucking pocketbook, and once you kick their ass in the pocketbook,
exactly,
they'll start treating people in a fairer way. It's not a matter of, because some of these people are, some of these groups some of them are, managed by out-of-town, orders and management anyway, or they get into positions of power and they just, do what they want. So I don't, I'm less willing to believe that just, a mellow approach, and this is my problems with the sanctuary camp approach that Brent is trying. Although, I hope it works for him, and I hope it works for all of us, for all those who need a sanctuary camp, and he's doing a lot of good publicity trying to get that going. But the idea that, authorities are going to roll over for the you know, the honey approach. Honey works better than vinegar.
They don't.
It's not always, you know, is I don't think it's been shown to be true in other cities where there actually are small sanctuary campgrounds, mostly established by protest.
But not, Santa Cruz, you know, is not that kind of city. It's the
what I'm saying is, in order to begin, you have to. Well, that's the point. You get established by protest, and that is not something that Brent wants. I guess he feels he's tried it. He's going to trial for it in a month with the Santa Cruz 11, and there is a protest coming up for those who are interested. And I'm going to be at that protest. It's going to be a parade. It's supposed to be kind of a celebratory parade. It's support the 11 on the 11th, and actually seven of us are no longer charged, but there are four of us who are for being in a vacant bank building to protest the bankster fraudulent foreclosures of the Wells Fargo Bank in town. And their bank building is right across from the other building that they leased at 75 River that a number of people occupied, and a number of the rest of us went into, looked at it, were supportive, publicized it, and then got arrested for it and charged with felonies, facing 7 years in prison, and we had to go through a year in trial. So Brandt has tried the protest approach, he does a variety of. He's a very, of course, devoted video journalist and works hard on that stuff. Anyway, enough of that situation. The issue here is the Abbey Cafe. What are they doing? Cafe Pergolesi, options at how to address these issues. I'm actually going to move from that subject because we've been talking about it to some of the interviews we can discuss other issues that come up too. And I would encourage people to call in, but I got an email from activist Becky Johnson that they didn't. It was the interview by of Elijah, the burrito man from San Francisco, was very hard to hear. So we may not actually have a way of doing that, of taking phone calls and putting them on the air.
He may not want his phone. Phone on the air. You know what I mean?
What? Who, Elijah?
The guy, yeah, that we were talking to.
No, he does. He wanted us. He wanted to speak to the community. That was the whole point.
Okay. Well, do we have a number for him at all?
I don't know. I might at home, but I don't have it here, and we don't have long distance access here.
Oh, you don't record your numbers as they come in?
We do not have long distance facility to call out. We can call locally. We can't call long distance. Okay. So let's hear some interviews, which are been piling up. And let's have people who are outside do some talking, too. Well, you're one of them, Michael. You're outside. Pat, you're not. But, you know, you're okay.
But I was mistaken as one.
Well, you know, that's because you hang around with the wrong crowd. Obviously.
Maybe I had a hole in my shirt that day.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm outside occasionally, but no.
I can answer the phone, but I don't think we can put her on the air, whoever is calling in. Hi, you're not on free radio, but I am hearing you. Go ahead. We have nationwide calling. That's nice. Except that we haven't even got local call-ins in terms of being able to put the phones out onto the air tonight. So thank you. That was Uncle Dennis calling in, who I will add as a show coming up in 50 minutes called From the Cream to the Dregs. And thank you, Dennis, for that. Now, if you could just tell us how to get these phones working during the show, I would be so happy.
Well, you did pretty good the last time with the way you had it.
We might have
apparently
heard it,
not.
But other
apparently
people
not. Really? Not according to an email I just got.
I see.
So let's hear some stuff from the streets. Actually, where we're starting here is this is the protest that in San Francisco took place around the Human Rights Day attempt to get a bill of rights for people. And let's hear that while I turn to the phones.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. I'm here to say hello to you from Los Angeles, from Seattle, from Sacramento, from Albany, California, from Portland, Oregon, from Garberville, from Eureka, California. These are all communities that are doing exactly the same thing we're doing now, standing up and demanding justice and demanding to be treated as human beings. We can connect our issues because when we speak from the heart, we're all the same issue. It's about treating people like they're fucking human beings. And we know damn well that it ain't about charity, and it ain't about anybody feeling sorry for us, and then they're going to give us our rights. Nobody gives you your rights. You demand your rights. You take your rights. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're about. Anybody who tells you poor and homeless people are to be pitied or to be felt sorry for don't know what it means to be poor and homeless. We are beautiful. We are proud. We can do puppets. We can do artwork. We can make music. We can kick ass. We can have a good time. And we can win. Put a brother on the spot here. Y'all going to give him a big hand because he's speaking for one of the first times in front of a large group like this, because he's going to be talking to us about homeless youth and what it means to be out there on the street on your ass when you ain't got a place to call home. Here at Don Deus.
First off, my name is Adonis. To be corrected, Adonis.
Adonis.
Okay, everybody, my name is Adonis.
Adonis!
Yes. All right, so I'm me and my organization, we are the ones that brought the puppets. We are from Houston. We are from Houston. Hello, hello.
Yeah.
All right. So, my name is Donnie's father. We're from Berkeley, California. We are a program called Youth Spirit Artworks. We are a job program that services youth in our high schools. Berkeley High, Berkeley Tech, Oakland High, Oakland Tech. Homeless or at risk of being homeless youth in the school century. And we, all right, so, no, it's still not working.
Yeah, it is.
All right, so, anyways, so we teach young youth in our community how to fight the stereotype that you are not worth anything. We teach you how to express yourselves, how to make money from your own project. They come in here and do artwork and sell their artwork and make a beautiful profit from that artwork. We also go out and do all the beautiful community in the South Berkeley area. Community artwork, we do murals, town mosaicing, school signs. One of our youth got hit by, sister got hit by a car. We're going to put up a town mosaic sign at the schools telling them that slow down, there are youth around here. Look at us, we have a voice. We use our artwork to do a lot of different community events. We use these puppets to fight the no-sit light ordinance in Berkeley. They were trying to make it illegal. You got tired. If you had nowhere to go.
And this whole speech was taking place a couple weeks ago in front of the federal building, and there were some large puppets, not as large as the Santa Cruz puppets that may well be in the parade for the Santa Cruz 11 on the 11th, which will be starting at the Saturn Cafe in the parking lot there in the same place that the DIY New Year's parade starts, I guess. But this was quite a group of people. There were at least 100 to 150 people, 200 people in the street, taking up at least one lane of traffic and raising issues of we need a Bill of Rights, homeless rights for people in the state of California. There have been bills passed in Rhode Island, Connecticut, Illinois. There are not particularly strong, and I haven't heard they've had any particular impact. There was a Bill of Rights that began to get passed last year, the Ammiano Bill, AB5, and it died in committee and has not been reintroduced. It didn't die, it got suspended, and it hasn't been reintroduced this year, and it's not strong enough to deal with the real issue, which is criminalization of the homeless. And the government loves to spend, you know, millions, if not billions, probably more like millions, researching the issue and, you know, and essentially funneling money to middle class and, I don't know, developers who are, you know, building selective housing for small numbers of people, but not really addressing the issue as it needs to be addressed. And in the meantime, people are criminalized for being outside because middle class people don't like to look at people who are outside. They get nervous when there are people camping in the bushes down the street, sometimes justifiably, often not. And, you know, that then the issue for those of us who are not ready to say the millennium is at hand is stop fucking with people who aren't doing anything wrong, even if you don't like the way they look. If you don't like the way they smell, put in showers. And don't give us this crap about, oh, they're bums and they're getting a free ride. There are plenty of people in this country who are getting a huge free ride, and it's known as the 1%. And if you're going to be concerned about that issue, you know, then be concerned about it where it matters, not against people who are, could be your relatives, your friends, your family, and could be you, you know, when you come on hard times. And that is, that's a reality. I know it's a cliche too, but it's also a reality. Let's hear some more from the San Francisco protests of the, I think it was the 17th of January.
They're trying to make it illegal. We use these puppets every night at City Hall fighting for that, and they didn't pass because of the puppets. You have a voice. You can make a difference. And so that's our executive director. She is the one that told us to come here and speak for us. So this is our project, and I want to thank everybody for being here. We're going to keep fighting. House keys, not handcuffs.
And that was the theme, one of the themes, and has been the theme of the homeless Bill of Rights struggle, house keys, not handcuffs.
So we got two more stops to make on this journey. We're going to go from here down down Polk Street to the front of the State Building on the other side there, and we're going to hear from a couple of more folks there, and then we're going to head over to City Hall. So let's get the party started.
That was Paul Bowden, who actually organized this along with a fellow activist with RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project, which Paul was previously the big cheese at the Coalition on Homelessness, the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out the twice-monthly newspaper homeless people sell called Street Sheet. There's another one called Street Spirit that's also sold up there, and it's good stuff, interesting stuff. I don't refer to it enough.
Now, I know ain't that. No power like the power of the people, because the power of the people don't stop. Say what? Ain't no power like the power of the people, because the power of the people don't stop.
Ain't no power like the power of the people, because the power of the people don't stop.
Brought you on this march?
Huh?
What brought you here?
I'm homeless. I have a family of children that's homeless.
How long you been homeless?
I've been homeless since April 30th.
And what?
2012.
Wow. So you've been out there for
a long time.
2 years? Yeah, year and a half?
I'm in transitional housing right now.
And how is that treating you?
It's very good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how many people would you say are trying to get into that transitional housing?
Oh, it's a lot of people. They have lists waiting, because it's a lot of families that's in San Francisco that are being displaced. I come from the Western Addition, and they have management companies that the city and county, they're signing up, like the Mayor Housing with Olson Lee, they're signing up with these companies that are displacing African-Americans in the Western Addition, coming in and using all their tactics and things to push the families out.
How long have you been active?
I've been active for over a year. I've joined the Homeless Coordinator.
What prompted you to do that?
Because I thought it was unfair to what happened to me due to my addiction, how they did it, and it was all they did things that was wrong, and I just received a letter that I may be getting a place, but in the letter they contacted the place that I was staying in, and they lied to them about why I was evicted. I have no record, no criminal record, but they said that I had a criminal record.
And your name is?
My name is Leontine Collins.
Thank you very much. And we're now crossing Golden Gate and taking up a couple of lanes of house keys. And the
you got to help us out.
You got it.
Right? Look at Tony Bear.
Yeah, right.
Anyone to stay in one lane?
There are several police officers who are trying to keep the protest on the one side of the street where it is, where one direction of traffic is going. I usually like to take the entire street if we're doing a protest, because the whole point is to do a protest, not to do a sort of a mannerly skip to Malou, my darling, and then go home. It is to raise the issue loudly because it needs to be raised. And the police officers were not there in large numbers. There were couple, you know, a handful, six or seven or eight or nine, and they weren't, you know, arresting anybody, but people were kind of succumbing to what I call the inner cop, which is the fear of that the police create so that you will monitor yourself so that they don't have to monitor you. You'll give up your rights voluntarily. You'll give up your public space voluntarily. You'll give up the need to protest voluntarily or domesticate it to the extent that it just becomes insignificant or far less significant than it might be. I think that's been the problem, I think, in this country for quite a while.
And there are police trying to keep people in one lane, but some of us are simply ignoring that. This is a protest, after all, not a tea party. It's about 3:15. We're at the State of California Earl Warren Building. 3:50 McAllister.
And it's still kind of warm. And again, it's many a house key is not handcuffed sign. A very large placard as folks stand at the, well, a banner at the top of the steps. For the
people unite, shout it out for human rights.
All the people unite, shout it out for human rights.
All the people unite, shout it out for human rights.
Hayward, California. Goodwill. Bob Goodwill. Give it a round of applause.
I can't stand up here all day, and I'm sure you don't want to listen to me all day. So fortunately, I just picked one reason why events like this are important. And that's for us to get out here and let people know who we are.
Woo!
If there's anything we try to do, we're going to run up against a brick wall called NIMBY.
Anything we're trying to do, we're going to run up against a brick wall called NIMBY. Out of my backyard.
That's one of those. According to the U.S. Census, 12.5% of Hayward's population lives below the federal poverty limit, 18,259 people, a higher percentage than Alameda County as a whole. The largest food pantry in Hayward served 5,835 Hayward residents last year. Almost 75% of the kids in the Hayward Unified School District are eligible for free and reduced price meal programs. Individuals, families can come once a week to the South Hayward Parish and receive 3 days worth of food. Per person.
It sounds a lot like this is sort of the son of the grandson of the Black Panther Party free breakfast programs from the 60s and the early 70s, before, of course, they were smashed by the police department and FBI and COINTELPRO and national attacks on left movements at that time.
I worked all my life, and I am now on Social Security, says one participant. My rent takes 80% of my check. I receive $14 a month in food stamps. Food pantries and meal programs are vital for me. Myth, people should just get a job.
Yeah.
Fact, 13% of Hayward's population are unemployed, roughly 20,000 people. Despite some signs of economic recovery, there are still 3 to 100 people per job opening. People with intermittent work experience, interactions with law enforcement, poor health and hygiene, addiction, and other complications cannot be generally compete in the open job market. Government-funded vocational programs in Hayward are primarily focused on services for youth, those with children and individuals with disabilities who are not homeless. Further, 50 to 75% of those who use food pantries are employed and still struggling to make ends meet. Myth. Outdoor meal programs cause litter, illness, and public safety hazards. Fact. In 10 years of tracking food services in Hayward, only 2 reports of mild illness have been linked to a food provider. Meal program providers and participants picked up the litter in the park areas where meals happen and have written a code of conduct.
And this, of course, is as Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, has pointed out on the air, this is a renewed attack that is happening across the country in different cities on food providers. The point is nothing to do with health safety for people who are eating food. It has to do with eliminating visible poverty, the appearance of visible poverty, and the recognition that there are huge numbers of people who are hungry and will come to these meals. The Santa Cruz has experienced the same thing with meals they've attempted to drive away. I was at the protests that we had in front of Forever 21 protesting the sidewalk shrinkage law 3 or 4 months ago, the group, the Thursday religious group that was trying to, that regularly sets up there with chess tables and food and so forth for a couple hours, was harassed by the staff person who created the sidewalk shrinkage law, Julie Hendy. She came out and she was talking about how that just creates a lot of litter, all you people. And I frankly I've not noticed that to be true. I mean, Beach Boardwalk creates a lot of litter, you know, and maybe they got their employees to clean it up. Maybe they don't. I've heard a lot of concerns that the amount of money that the city gets from the Beach Boardwalk is far less than the services put into it, or there's a significant real discrepancy there where essentially we're contributing to a large private business taxpayer money. But in any case, this attacks on food providers is not a alien to Santa Cruz. I was arrested repeatedly for serving free food in Santa Cruz 25 years ago, and because we continue to do it, that's why I believe we're able to do it today, because the city knows they had that experience, although under Mayor Rattlesnake Robinson, we may have to go through this whole thing again, although I don't see no specific indication. And, you know, you might say, well, why are you vilifying this poor new mayor? You know, here she is. What has she done? And I guess I can point to the bike barricade and the bike bullshit that's been going on, where at-risk youth have been denied bicycles by the Santa Cruz Police Department for 2 years. And I haven't heard. I saw Mayor Robinson essentially support a continued barricade, stonewalling of the bicycles by funneling them instead, some of them to the teen center and most of the stuff to online auctions, instead of returning them to the bike church that had been distributing them to nonprofits for a number of years before that. Because, and this is speculation, I would speculate, the police department has its issues with the bike church, and also the broader concern that they don't want homeless people to get enablement from groups like the bike church. They want the city to be friendly to folks with money, but not so friendly to folks without. And there's this sort of broad agenda, either stated or not stated, that is going on all over the place, or at least that I imagine is going on. I'd like to find out how much my imagination is carrying me away and how much I'm actually right on target. And hopefully I'll learn that. We'll learn that about the cafes, perhaps the Abbey Cafe, where you have found discrimination, you report discrimination. It's also a rather slimy tactic to get you out of the cafe with your backpack, not telling you you've been banned until you hit the sidewalk. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened.
I know that used to happen to me when I would come to a, I don't know, some sort of a concert, and I would try to walk into a concert to pay. I don't know if it was because of my appearance, or I don't know what it was. I wasn't an activist much in those days. But the tactic used by the bouncer would be to try to draw you aside. And I thought it was measured to say, no, tell me right here what your concern is in front of all the rest of these people. Don't try to do it as a secret deal. You know, and they may think they're just trying to spare your feelings, but actually they're trying to spare... They have more power in a private situation with you than they do in a public situation. What's that? And they don't want to look bad before the group of people, and they also don't want you to create a fuss, and so they want to just sort of damp you down. And I think, however nicely they did that to you, if your account is accurate, again, we only have your side of it. I'm not talking to the management of the Abbey Cafe here, so I don't know. And I guess that's what we should do, is have a little field trip to the Abbey Cafe and see what they're up to. Let's hear some more from San Francisco and the push for a... Essentially, it's not so much to dislodge a bill from the Sacramento Legislative Committee, it's to create a new bill that actually will address the real issues. I was suggesting people start trying to get a Bill of Rights in every city. The problem, of course, is if you try to get it through the legislatures as they're currently constituted, that are heavily weighted against poor people and in favor of real estate developer and business interests, or, you know, unions have some power, but often, you know, unions can be hostile to homeless people, too. Unfortunately, you know, there's no union of the homeless in Santa Cruz. We actually had the beginnings of one at different times. Anyway, let's hear some more from San Francisco's days of protest or day of protest. It's actually a weekend where they were going doing it, but this was the one day when there was a march about the city.
The ability to enforce the code of conduct and to offer hygiene, supportive services, and most importantly, the opportunity to contribute to their own self-sufficiency is severely limited in outdoor meal programs. For this reason, people who are hungry and or homeless in the Hayward and those who provide food service are asking for help to create a centralized resource, recovery, and productive engagement center. Myth: changing the status quo is too expensive. Fact: on October 1, 2013, the City of Hayward will propose a new ordinance that will require outdoor meal program providers to go through a restrictive permitting process. And by the way, they passed this. Details of this proposed ordinance have yet to be released. It is anticipated that those who do not comply will be fined. In addition, current city enforcement efforts cost over $100 an hour. This proposition could be expensive and will not guarantee that meal programs move out of the public spaces. However, in cities across the country, centralized service centers connect people with food as well as opportunities to address the underlying causes of their hunger. Such a program has been piloted at a small level for 4 years in Hayward and has found that when people can contribute to their own success, helping to make a meal for themselves and others, cleaning up, using and building on existing skills, their success in housing, rehabilitation, and employment is much higher. This current pilot does not have the space to accommodate the 9 outdoor meal programs currently in operation in Hayward, but could be expanded with existing resources.
Yay.
All right.
Another common myth that even homeless people have of themselves is that they're stupid. Homeless people are not stupid. Look at me. I'm a high school graduate. Thanks for your time.
And low-income people working Californians, Jessica Bartolo from the Western Center on Law and Poverty.
Don't be misled. This is what Santa Cruz does as well. Now, while it is true, theoretically, the law was changed in 2010 that said if you're on the waiting list of the Homeless Lack of Services Center's River Street Shelter or the Pauley Loft or the Armory is full, you will not be either the sleeping ban won't apply to you, the camping ordinance won't apply to you, and or if it is, if you're cited, you can, the tickets will be dismissed prior to court. And in some cases, this is true. But in many cases, what's happening is the police are using other ordinances, or alternately, they are giving people tickets, and then when people don't show up for their tickets, sending them for collection, and then once you get three tickets, unattended tickets, in a, I think it's a six-month period or maybe even less, they can then charge you with a misdemeanor, which is essentially failing to attend to your tickets. Or they then there's another a second law passed by the Santa Cruz City Council and ratified by including Don Lane, council member and a mayor recently, with a fine homeless speech about how wonderful homeless people were and how we should all be so compassionate. That says if you get any more citations beyond those three, all of them will be treated as misdemeanors, even if it's not the same crime. Even if you got three tickets for sitting in front of a store that was closed and, let's say, vacant, and another ticket for sleeping and another ticket for, I don't know, in one of the areas where they say they're growing vegetation but nothing has grown there for years, but it's merely intended to stop public assembly, or if you're in a park after dark, any of these things, then any subsequent infraction you get, no matter how small, can be charged as a misdemeanor by the city attorney. And this is actually not just being threatened, it was being done. And John Barisoni, our shitty attorney, as I have occasionally called him, brought that information to the public hysteria task force, or the public safety task force, as they like to call themselves, which, you know, was served up a whole bunch of toxic resolutions for the city council, which are now presumably cycling through Terrazas's public safety committee at the city council. And the point is, sleeping is a crime in Santa Cruz. That's the point.
With enough support to move forward. It got held in a committee for finances. Apparently, it cost a lot of money to guarantee people basic human rights. There should be no amount of money that should be too much in order to make sure every human being has basic human rights.
The prisons are red light.
But I'm going to use it anyway. All right. Everybody, the best part of my life last year was going by the busload with all of you people. How many of you people went to Sacramento last year? Sacramento, that we need all the Bill of Rights. That was the best part of my life last year. We have to keep doing that. We as a state and also as a West Coast are continuing to work together. We don't need to have a bill that's introduced by a politician, because we all know what rights we need, what rights we're being denied, and we know exactly what to ask for. We're still going to continue asking Sacramento and educating all of our policymakers and leaders about what's going on in homeless people's lives. That they're getting arrested for things like sitting, sleeping, eating, and that is simply not acceptable. We're never going to solve homelessness if we keep arresting people who are homeless for simply existing. So, we are continuing our campaign across the state and across the West Coast to talk in every single community and to grow the number of people that we have that are supporting us. I don't know if anybody here has ever had a dog as a pet. Have you? When you train your dog to sit, does he sit the first time you tell him to sit? What do you have to do? You have to tell do it again and again and again. And finally, when you say sit, that dog sits. That's what we have to do.
Politicians.
That's what we have to do with our politicians. It's not going to work the first time. The second time, we have to tell them and show them and keep going back and never give up. And that's what we're going to do until we get the rights that we need codified into law so that we're protected.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, dogs are smarter than politicians.
The state building. We want to bring somebody up. We can talk about.
And this again is a San Francisco rally that happened on the 17th in support of a homeless bill of rights. In the studio, Pat Colby, you got some comments.
Well, I just wanted to say, through talking to different social workers and different attorneys and people that work with when the homeless are arrested, we can afford to pay $3,000 for them to spend two or three nights in jail. I don't think that's very cost-effective. I mean, that's how much it costs pretty much for one night to ticket them, to take them to court, and then to put them in jail and go through that process. So if we could take that $3,000 per ticket and put it together and house these homeless people instead of arresting them, that would be more cost-effective. That's my comment.
Thank you.
The state budget and how it affects working people and homeless people. I want to bring up Pete from the California Partnership.
Thank you all. Thank you for being here. This is really exciting, right? Look around. Look at what we've got here. We've got power in the streets today. That's exciting, right? So I work with the California Partnership. We're a statewide coalition of anti-poverty organizations. All right! And we pay close attention to the state budget every year. State budget is a moral document that tells us what people in what the governor of California and what the government of California cares about and what they don't. So folks may have heard that the deficit is over, that there's no more deep budget cuts happening. So we were hoping this year that we would start to chip away at the grinding poverty in California. California has the largest, the highest percentage of poverty of any state in the country. You can boo that. Boo! What that means to me is that we need a deep investment in things like housing, health care, CalWORKS, which is a welfare-to-work program, programs that lift people out of poverty, give folks dignity in their lives. What the governor said on January 10th is that he wants to invest in debt and prisons. Debt and prisons were all the governor wanted to invest in on January 10th. We can boo that too, right? Boo! So what we've got to do, what the Homeless Bill of Rights says to me, and what the movement of you all doing says to me, is that we can't be silent, we can't be satisfied with this being the new normal, what's happening in our state being the new normal, that we're just going to pretend that the deep budget cuts of the last 10 years didn't happen, that we're just going to accept that 8.7 million Californians are living in poverty, we're just going to accept that nearly a quarter of all children in California are growing up in poverty. We're not going to accept that, are we? We're not going to accept it. What this says, what the Homeless Bill of Rights says, is that we are people too. Poor people are people too. All people in California deserve a place to live, dignity, and respect.
Amen!
So I think we're going to move on to City Hall in a second, but I want to hear from you. What are your values? Home, not jail.
Home, not jail. Home, not jail. Home, not jail.
And we're going to hear some more of that on Sunday when I have a longer show from 9:30 to 1 o'clock. I've got about 15 minutes left in the show. I want to mention that we do have Michael O'Grady here in the studio, who is houseless himself, in spite of his degrees as a doctor, and he's carrying his stuff with him.
I'm only houseless because I can't get the money from my bank in Arizona up here because my identification card is out of date by almost a year because I never use it. You know?
A likely story. You're a homeless bum. I can see that from your glasses. They're always doing that, folks. They just want us to give them a handout. A handout, not a handout.
Ride.
a free ride. So
free.
What you told me, though, is that last time you were on the show, you actually had to go find a place to crash outside because you were considering staying up all night by going to Denny's or some such place.
I missed the bus up to the Armory Park.
I think the last one leaves at 6 or so, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, a quarter to 6.
And, however, for the next 4 days, today, tonight, tomorrow night, the night after, and the night after that, Sunday night, apparently the Armory is closing for maneuvers, and so the Homeless Lack of Services Center is allowing homeless people to put down their sleeping bags in the area right outside the Homeless Service Center area.
Yeah, outside and inside.
Under the eaves
inside.
And inside.
Mm-hmm.
So why they couldn't do this every night, and it would, be much more convenient for homeless people to use, and this is what we used to have in terms of tent cities, I guess when there was a Coral Street Open Air Shelter, 93 through 95, when there was Camp Paradise, 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. It seems to me a much more reasonable approach for people, for example, who have night jobs, who have pets, who have vehicles. If you have a vehicle, you can't take it up to the Armory. You know, it's not. If you have a pet, you can't take it into the Armory. Are there service animals in the Armory, by the way?
I haven't seen any, but I did see one dog up there one night. I don't know how it got in. I think it's unofficially.
Who let
in.
The dogs in?
By law, they have to let a service animal in.
Well,
that might be it. It might be a service animal.
The law. The law. I don't think there's a lot of respect for the law here.
Federal funding. They have to go by federal.
Only if somebody
takes
it to
the
courts.
We only recognize fair laws.
Well,
unfair laws.
Yes. That too, of course. I think what I'm also going to do, just sort of a couple things I wanted to say before the time ticks out here, is there's actually a rather interesting... There's an interesting posting, again, by the same guy who spoke about discrimination on the sidewalk outside the Cafe Pergolesi, Mark Weller, or Waller. And he posted an article. The point is that many, if not the majority of homeless people, think of homeless people as less than everyone else. They attach an image of desperation that they have seen somewhere, which is usually stark and negative. There's a general feeling of fear that drives the mental separation of homeless folks from the rest of society. And I have this stereotype myself. Especially in today's economic disaster, the knowledge that they, traditionally housed people, could be one step away from homelessness themselves causes most to look the other way, to condemn homelessness as a blight on society. This leads to crime against homeless people from groups like Take Back Santa Cruz that go out and harass the homeless, sometimes beating or killing them. I got to say, I have not heard of any Take Back Santa Cruz people who have beaten or killed a homeless person.
There was somebody, I don't know if it was this town or it's some town nearby. There was a guy some time ago, I can't put my finger on the exact time, but he went out. A shooting, killing homeless people.
Well, there was Code Blue when the cops were beating up homeless people, but that was 35 years ago. And there have been, there certainly are, of course, a lot of instances of discrimination, hostility, and, we've had the case of Officer Hernandez drawing his gun by the report of three people on a family at the Salvation Army during the Thanksgiving period, 2 days before Thanksgiving. Not far away from our secret location, our secret studio location. So we don't want to get into that too closely. Otherwise,
do they have any fusion centers in this area?
Fusion centers. I don't know if you're talking about... no.
Spy centers.
I don't know. And I think that...
The last I heard, there was 70, I think, 2 in the whole of the United
could
States.
Could be. And,
I'm
you
not
know,
sure where they're located.
And there actually are some issues coming up in the near future that even the local, generally useless ACLU is looking at. In that last week's Good Times, there was an article on the surveillance license plate recognition software that the police department got a grant for that only I opposed at the city council. And I couldn't even get credit in John Malkin's article, unfortunately. He didn't want to name me because I think he felt I would... I don't know, perhaps discredit his article,
famous.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I wrote him complaining about that, saying, John, come on, he's a radio broadcaster, he has a show on Wednesday night, a very good show, called The Great Leap Forward, but this is the small crouch backward, as far as I can see, but then again, we can talk about it. if he wants to. He's very, such a very genteel guy, and sometimes he prefers not to talk about issues that may be dividing people. And I have a lot of divisions with people on the left as well that are not, you know, I try to also work with them, because even if one disagrees, one certainly has common causes as well. This author, Mark Waller, continues, taking their belongings and trashing them, accusing them of crimes they did not commit. And that is, in fact, something that Take Back Santa Cruz activists publicly did do in the case of Ken Maffei, the guy who had a bunch of flowers, and he wandered by the funeral of the far too heralded Butler and Baker police officers who were killed in this event that happened with the Goulet incident, where he was also killed. And they, you know, he was accused of stealing flowers from the memorial. And they all went to court to demand that he be given a maximum sentence. And he was put in jail for 17 days while awaiting trial, until they found he had a receipt for the flowers. They were his flowers. He brought them along. He wasn't giving them out at the memorial, but he was pausing at the memorial. He was going somewhere else with them.
Donuts.
He was giving them donuts?
He was leaving. He bought a dozen donuts to put at the memorial.
Is that a sarcastic move?
No, he was like, you know,
offering them to people who wanted them.
Yeah, other people. Well, no, he was just putting it on the memorial to kind of.
This is from the Sentinel, or you talked to witnesses there?
I talked to witnesses.
Really? This is when in your old Take Back Santa Cruz days, when you you're hanging out with Butchie Baker's pals, were you?
They won't let me in Take Back Santa Cruz. I'm still waiting to be approved to join. It's been over a year now.
Well, you've got to talk to Annalisa Cube. Go up there and tell her you're an articulate design person. You can design some great flyers for Take Back Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, I can do all flyers.
I heard that you can do good flyers.
Do websites. And
yeah. Well, apparently they're pretty good at doing websites. Of course, TJ Magallanes, who apparently is a big supporter of the Cafe Pergolesi, and I'm not saying one shouldn't be, he also has been on my show and talked about how his website, The Clean Team, was taken over by Take Back Santa Cruz activists more concerned with using this as a political football.
About numbers of needles.
The needle hysteria, or needle mania,
three,
as I call it.
They find three, which is equal to 50 in their numbers. They need to learn.
I'm not saying they exaggerate their numbers, or some have said that.
I'm saying that.
You are saying that. I'm saying that the numbers that they claim, even if accurate, are a drop in the bucket to the number of needles that are turned into needle exchange, and that they also represent a very small danger relatively to people, although they certainly create a great panic and fright, and that is the real power of that whole needle hysteria. Continuing, Mark Waller wrote, "This is simply a fearful, narrow-minded reaction to reality. The reality is that every day more people become homeless. The causes are usually loss of a job due to health or the economy, or an employer cutting back to avoid paying for Obamacare. The reality is, out of the 7-something billion people in this world, literally millions live in other than traditional housing." I'd say billions, but every day as many leave their homes, drive, or otherwise get to a job, so as it's hard to read this, socialize with all the others doing the same thing, and live as a consumer, many are right next to us on a bus bench, walking down the sidewalk, or in a car, or working a job also. These folks are the homeless. They are, for the most part, invisible. They live as best they can, trying to live their lives, trying to improve their situations. You just don't see them. The ones you see are the very poorest of the homeless, the ones that have nowhere else to go but on the street, the ones that have dirty clothing because the laundromat owner threw them out, or possibly the Abbey Cafe owner threw them out. They live in the parks, the graveyards, the forest at the edge of town. They eat and sleep and some work. They live and cry, some drink or use drugs to forget, but all of them are human. All of them deserve respect as a human, no different from anyone else does. My call is to educate, to help humanity, to share reality, and to convince as many as I can of the harsh truths surrounding this epidemic issue. Your call is to hear me, to listen, to learn, and grow as a part of humanity. I urge everyone to really think about society, about humanity, about this issue, and to learn and grow as a human, to build empathy, to espouse a real feeling of care for each other, to treat each other oneself. not quite sure what he means there. Do one thing each day to help a poor person, share a meal or a few dollars or a kind word, look at others and realize humanly love for them, share a positive phrase, give a hug, go out of your way to make a difference to someone. I might add, turn in a report on discrimination against poor people, video a police officer who is behaving in an abusive fashion towards a person on the street, and then you can make a real difference. We have about 3 minutes left in the show. Uncle Dennis, what's coming up on your show? Anything exciting?
Music, and more music, not to mention news at 9.
News at 9, and, of course, the Earth First Report.
That's
right. Anything? Well, you'll be going to that at 9. Is there anything else? I think I have one or two other things here. Santa Cruz is pushing for a constitutional protection zone, which I may be discussing on Sunday, which has to do with the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which, essentially puts everyone in the condition that poor and homeless people.